Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, October the 19th, 2018. Today in the weather, we're looking at some cloudy skies with a high of 54 and a low of 41. And on the front page, we see thrills, chills on the haunted trail, and a picture of Kendall McKinney of Bloomington shows off her donut costume Thursday during the opening night of Haunted Trail on Constitution Trail in Normal. The Haunted Trail, now in its 23rd annual stint, uses a quarter mile of the trail, starting at City Hall Annex at 100 East Phoenix Avenue and ending at the Connie Link Amphitheater. The admission is $2, but free with a food donation during this weekend's non-scary trail, which continues from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday. A scary trail will take place from 6:30 to 9 p.m. October 26th through the 27th. For more photos, you could go to thepantograph.com. But we see pictures of gorillas waiting for visitors on Thursday night's opening night, and they're in bright orange jumpsuits with silly faces. And we see visitors walking on Constitution Trail Thursday during the opening, and there's a bright pink, reddish, scary looking house. It looks like a lot of fun for boys and girls. Well, the schools look to bridge language barriers. This is the Cedar Ridge program helps students refine Spanish English skills. Signs around the building hint at what's different at Cedar Ridge Elementary School. Doors, elevators, and drinking fountains, to name a few, have words in Spanish and English identifying what they are. They help Spanish speakers and English speakers learn each other's language. But the learning doesn't stop there at the school, where 30% of the 510 students are Hispanic. Through a program called Se Habla Español, which roughly translates into We Speak Spanish, English-speaking students are learning to speak Spanish. Once a week, for 6 weeks, students get 30 minutes of instruction from Illinois State University students who are part of the Student Association for Bilingual Education. The teachers are really enjoying having this program so they can learn the language too, said Principal Jahar Jensen. A lot of lessons are song-based. The idea for the program came from Patsy Weber, whose grandson attends Cedar Ridge. I have a grandson who is in fifth grade, and I have been involved there since he was kindergarten, said Weber. A couple of years ago, she became friends with a fourth grade teacher, and we felt it was important that the English speaking kids at Cedar Ridge learn Spanish, said Weber. She worked with Manuela Diaz, the bilingual parent liaison, to develop Se Habla Español. Cedar Ridge also has an after school Spanish club where students learn Spanish, but Se Habla Español was seen as a way to involve the whole school. As the program was developed, Jensen was concerned about being able to keep the program going even if Weber and Diaz were no longer involved. They put together a course outline and involved the ISU student organization to address that concern. Jensen said, "I'm excited about the program and how it will ultimately bring our children closer." The school also has a Hispanic fair to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. The students travel around the world to learn all about our Hispanic countries, said Jensen. Diaz recruited parents she knows to help with the program. Displays were set up in different parts of the school, and students traveled from room to room to learn about food, clothing, famous people, and traditions of each country. Each student had a passport that included an outline of the country and a picture of its flag. This year, the featured countries were Colombia, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Guatemala, Mexico, and Venezuela. Diaz said she tries to include different countries each year. Weber said the volunteer teachers from ISU just finished the 6-week session for second and third graders. This will be followed by the after-school Spanish club for 5 weeks. Lessons for fourth and fifth graders will start in December. It's been wonderful, said Weber. Continuing with the note of people in our hemisphere, we see that Trump calls on Mexico to halt a caravan of immigrants. As about 3,000 Hondurans made their way through Guatemala, attention turned to Mexico after the U.S. President Donald Trump threatened Thursday to close the U.S.-Mexico border if authorities there fail to stop them, a nearly unthinkable move that would disrupt hundreds of thousands of legal freight, vehicle, and pedestrian crossings each day. With less than 3 weeks before the November 6th midterm elections, Trump seized on the migrant caravan to make broader security a political issue and energize his Republican base. I must, in the strongest of terms, ask Mexico to stop this onslaught, and if unable to do so, I will call upon the U.S. military and close our southern border. Trump tweeted, adding that he blamed Democrats for what he called weak laws. The threat followed another one earlier this week to cut off aid to Central American countries if the migrants weren't stopped. Trump made a similar vow over another large immigrant caravan in April, but did not follow through, and it largely petered out in Mexico. On Thursday, Mexico dispatched additional police to its southern border after the Casa del Migrante shelter on the Guatemalan side of the border reported that hundreds of Hondurans had already arrived there. Mexican officials said the Hondurans would not be allowed to enter as a group and would either have to show a passport and visa, something few have, or apply individually for refugee status, a process that can mean waiting up to 90 days for approval. They said migrants caught without papers would be deported. Marcelo Ebrard, who is set to become Foreign Relations Secretary when President-elect Andrés Manuel López Obrador takes office December 1st, said Trump's tweets need to be understood in the context of the upcoming U.S. midterm elections. The electoral process is very near, so he is making a political calculation, Ebert said in an interview with Radio Central. Trump's stance, he said, was what he has always presented, adding he saw nothing surprising in it. Still, the idea that Mexico could close its porous southern border or that the United States would choke off the lucrative trade and other traffic between the two nations strained the imagination. There would be huge economic impacts for both the United States and Mexico, but limited effect on illegal immigration, said Andrew Seeley, president of the Migration Policy Institute. The president certainly can slow down crossing at legal border crossings where about 1 million people cross each day. What would really hurt legal transit between the two countries and manufacturing and trade, which would affect American workers, Seeley said. But it would have much less impact on illegal border crossings between ports of entry. Stephanie Lutrait, director of the Mexico Security Initiative at the University of Texas at Austin, said she interpreted the tweet to mean Trump could send troops not to ports of entry but elsewhere where the illegal crossings take place. If that's the case, I don't think Mexico should be too worried, because in a sense, it's the same kind of thing U.S. administrations have been doing for a long time, Lutrait said. Like Guatemala and Honduras, Mexico is a country of many migrants, raising the question of whether the political will exist for a confrontation. Lopez Obrador wants to avoid repression against migrants and also to avoid angering the United States. He said this week that Mexico would offer jobs to Central Americans. Anyone who wants to work in our country will have a work visa, he said. Trump also warned that he prioritizes border security over even the recently struck trade deal to replace NAFTA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or the USMCA. The assault on our country at our southern border, including criminal elements and drugs pouring in, is far more important to me as president than trade or the USMCA. Hopefully, Mexico will stop this onslaught at their northern border, Trump tweeted. Analysts didn't see the pact as being in imminent danger, though trade attorney Daniel Hortz of Dickinson Wright PLLC said there is a significant concern. Trump could hold the agreement hostage over future issues. Leaders around the world are skeptical that any deal with the U.S. administration is actually final, Hugues said, particularly one such as the USMCA, where the ink has not been put to the signature line. U.S.-bound migrant caravans have been going on for years, with traveling in numbers even as seen as offering protection from assaults, robberies, and even shakedowns by police. At the top of this page, this is page two now, Honduran migrants leave Guatemala City at sunrise Thursday as they make their way north towards the U.S. Many of the more than 2,000 Hondurans in the migrant caravan left spontaneously with little more than the clothes on their back and what they could quickly throw into backpacks. And you see to the right is a school bus on a well-traveled road and a line of people on the sidewalk on an overpass. And the first person is carrying a small babe in arms. And then you see women behind this first woman with backpacks and jackets preparing for the change in climate. Well, if you recall the Springfield court case of Kirk Zimmerman, this is something you might be interested in. In our local state news, files in murder case are still sealed. The court records closed until Zimmerman trial. The Illinois State Supreme Court ruled Thursday that information sealed by judge in the Kirk Zimmerman case may remain closed until the McLean County judge rules otherwise. The opinion involves an appeal filed by Zimmerman of the Fourth District Appellate Court ruling involving a legal challenge by the Pantograph, WGLT, and the Illinois Press Association for access to two motions filed by Zimmerman's lawyer, John Rogers. The Bloomington defendant is charged in the 2014 shooting death of his former wife, Pam. McLean County Judge Scott Dershowitz ruled in November of 2016 that the two motions dealing with the potentially sensitive information should be sealed. The judge said he would revisit the issue after jury selection. No trial date has been set for Zimmerman, and after the ruling Thursday, media attorney Don Craven said, "We're disappointed the court has withheld from the public view motions that were submitted to the court for judicial determination. What happens in the judicial system is a matter of public concern, and request for judicial decisions comes only from our What happens in the judicial system is a matter of public concern, and respect for judicial decisions comes only from our ability to watch and observe what happens in court and read the court files. In its 6-1 decision supporting Dershowitz's ruling, the Supreme Court compared the Zimmerman motions to information exchanged between lawyers during the discovery phase of a case. The court noted that the state does not intend to use the material described by the defense as salacious and inflammatory. The Supreme Court said disclosure of the information could potentially play a negative role by exposing the public and potential jurors to irrelevant information and could taint a jury pool. In his dissenting opinion, Justice Robert R. Thomas took issue with the majority finding that the motions in Lamine contain discovery materials. In fact, interveners are seeking only the two motions in Lamine that defendant himself filed with the court and thereby made part of the official court record. This is according to Justice Robert R. James. Zimmerman's legal team sought a reversal of the Fourth District ruling that found Now let's look at the flick fact for today. True or false, the latest Halloween movie starring Jamie Lee Curtis is out, based as always in Livingston County, just outside of Pontiac. So what do you think? True or false? Well, the answer is it's true and false. As in all other Halloween movies, it is based in Hayden Field, Illinois, It is a fictional place. Illinois is in Livingston County is in Illinois, but as in all other Halloween movies, it is a fictional place, and although the movie is set in Illinois, Halloween was filmed entirely in California. Let's go on and let's look at some of the historic features of this week. Today's highlight of October 19, 1789, John Jay was sworn in as the first Chief Justice of the United States. In 1781, British troops under Lord Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown as the American Revolution neared its end. In 1864, Confederate Lieutenant General Jubal A. Early soldiers attacked Union forces at Cedar Creek, Virginia, and then Union troops were able to rally and defeat the Confederates. In 1944, the U.S. Navy began accepting black women into the waves, which was the women accepted for volunteer emergency services. To this date, in 1950, in the Korean conflict, the United Nations forces entered the North Korean city of Pyongyang. And in 1953, the Ray Bradbury novel Fahrenheit 451, set in a dystopian future where books were banned and burned by the government, was first published by Ballantine Books. If you remember 1967, this was the year that the U.S. space probe Mariner 5 flew past Venus. And in 77, the supersonic Concorde made its first landing in New York City. The thought for today, if our country is worth dying for in time of war, let us resolve that it is truly worth living for in time of peace. That was from Hamilton Fish III, an American congressman. He lived from 1888 from 1991. We move on now to page A3 for the local and state news. And here we see that officials see a surge in early voting. An unprecedented surge in early voting has Twin City election officials wondering if the November 6th election will be equally busy or if it provides further evidence that alternative voting methods are catching on. My staff and I all agree that this by far is the most early voting and vote-by-mail applications we've seen for this type of election, said McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael. So the question is everyone early voting, and they would have voted anyway at the polling place or not. We were fooled in 2016 because by the time Election Day hit, we already had 25% of the vote. On Election Day, it was like, what's going on? Nobody's voting, said Bloomington Election Commission Executive Director Paul Shannon, adding he sees a general trend toward voting at times either on Election Day, other than Election Day. Shannon and Michael, whose operations oversee voting in the city of Bloomington and elsewhere in the county, respectfully agreed, however, that early returns are strong. That includes in-person early votes and requests for vote-by-mail ballots, though many of those haven't yet been returned. Michael said the clerk's office had 1,010 early votes and 2,274 vote-by-mail requests from 2018 as of for 2018 as of Thursday afternoon, with 18 days left until election. In 2016, those figures totaled 7,957 and 2,628, respectively. But presidential elections, like 2016, generally see higher turnout than midterms. The Bloomington Election Commission had 1,390 early votes and about 3,100 vote-by-mail requests as of Thursday afternoon, which Shannon said is roughly comparable to the previous midterm election in 2014. Shannon noted several outside organizations, Democratic and Republican, are pushing early voting and vote-by-mail options to increase total voter turnout. Usually, we see less interest in early voting after a couple of weeks and more early voters right before the election, but this time it's been pretty steady every day, said Shannon. Michael said she expects about 60% of voters turnout overall versus 50% for an average midterm, which includes voting for Illinois governor. Shannon said it could be as high as 70%. Certainly, a little higher turnout is average or low overall, said Shannon. Oh, let me rephrase that, please. Shannon said it could be as high as 70% in the vote, and certainly a little higher turnout than normal. If turnout is average or low overall, said Shannon, he'd like to see state lawmakers consider changes like vote centers, which consolidate polling places to save money for local governments, or broad vote-by-mail participation, which is the only way to vote in some other states, including Colorado. If this trend continues, the law needs to be changed on how we do Election Day. If we have 30% of the voters vote before Election Day, those laws have become antiquated, said Shannon. A lot of other options might be more fiscally intelligent. Early voting continues from 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday through October 26th. 8:30 to noon on October 27th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 28th, 8:30 to 7 p.m. October 29th to November the 2nd, and then 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. November 3rd, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. November 4th, and 8:30 to 7 p.m. November 5th at both offices. The Bloomington Election Committee and Clerk's Office are in rooms 403 and 102, respectively, in the Government Center at 115 East Washington Street, Bloomington. Early voting at Illinois State University is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 22nd to the 26th and October 29th to November 2nd. Bloomington residents can't register or vote there at the ISU Center. Here we have a short article, Suspect Back in Illinois. The suspect in a June 8th shooting that injured three people and injured a four-year-old boy arrived in Bloomington on Thursday from Wisconsin, where he has been since his arrest in July on drug charges. Sidney Mays Jr., 25, of the 1400 block of West Market Street, Bloomington, challenged extradition to McLean County on murder charges. He was transported to the McLean County Jail by Bloomington police after he lost his bid to remain in Wisconsin. Mays was indicted on first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated discharge of a firearm, and aggravated battery charges. The suspect is accused of killing Nate Pena, 22, Corey Jackson, 22, and Juan Carlos Perez, 33. Pena's four-year-old son was critically injured in the June 18 incident in the 300 block of Riley Drive. After May's arrival, State's Assistant Attorney Kristen Alfrink said, "We're glad he's here in McLean County so we can begin the process of resolving this case." Bloomington Police Sergeant Clayton Arnold recognized the assistance of the Milwaukee police and prosecutors in completing the extradition. "The Wisconsin authorities were more than accommodating, and we're thankful for that," said Arnold. Mays was released on a $5,000 personal recognizance bond Thursday in Milwaukee court on the pending drug charges in that county. Mays is expected in McLean County court Friday afternoon for a bond hearing. Let's look briefly here at a cute picture of a young lady gathering goodies at a trunk or treat event. It's Lauren Hamilton, 9, picks a piece of candy Thursday during a trunk or treat event at Sheridan Elementary School in Bloomington. Pre-Halloween event is a real treat, is the beginning of this article. And then we will also come back and look at church closing clothing closet after years of service. So those are two things we can look forward to in the next half hour. And this has been Nancy Pippen with the Pantograph for Friday, October the 19th. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour, so please stay tuned.